Excellent Morning Show on KHC Productions. If you enjoy this episode, please leave a like and comment. Hello, this is Jordan.
And Jared.
And Kale.
And we're recording Grand Assault back at our alma mater for two of us. And we got a bunch of things to talk about in the film industry, video game industry, and some celebrity news. So we will have an interview at the end of this episode with Jared, actually, recorded earlier this year.
Yeet.
And next week we'll have John Michael. So let's get down to this. Do we want to talk about what's going to come up in the box office and what's doing well? And then we can head into some celebrity news off of that. Kale, do you know what's coming up here soon?
What's coming up at the movies?
Yeah.
All right, so next weekend we have Ocean's 8, which is the sort of female reboot, I guess, of the Ocean's 11 trilogy.
Female reboot spinoff, yes.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And it's got the cast, Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, Rihanna, Helena Bonham Carter.
She's actually, Miss Carter, she may be the next Bond villain.
Oh,
there's talks about that, which
good.
I am down for that.
I see that. Entirely.
I also have an argument that either Idris Elba or the guy who plays Loki should be the next Bond.
Mm-hmm. They're gonna do
Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston.
Yes.
I'm okay with this.
Idris Elba, though, I think would be very suave. He's muscular.
He has a voice.
He has that deep British voice. I know he's not white like the rest of them, but I don't care. I want him in there.
There's only a few differences.
I want him in there because you know he'd be the one with the girls going, oh yeah, that's Bond. Because the guy we have now, he's good, but he feels more like Jason Bourne. He doesn't feel like a Bond hero. You know, he feels like he should be in an action film, not James Bond.
I say this as someone who likes Daniel Craig's James Bond, but it feels now at this point like we're staring at a stone wall.
Well, it's also because they literally have a plot in the movies is he's too old to be Bond. After that, what do you do after that? He goes, now he's in a nursing home as Bond. Like, let the man retire, bring in a new Bond.
He's just there in his deathbed with a sniper rifle.
He's with all the other James Bonds.
You killed off how many people of the cast? Like, just reboot it at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give us a reboot. Why not do both of them? Take Tom Hiddleston to be Q and bring Idris Elba as the new James Bond.
Allowed.
Very much allowed.
So, also opening this week, you got Hotel Artemis, which is Drew Pierce's.
I want to see
movie.
That.
That looks really cool.
That looks very interesting.
It's like John Wick, but The Purge.
Yeah, I'm loving it. Kim, why don't you move that where it's actually facing your face?
And sorry, it's been so long.
I also like their whole thing is just like, hey, we're a different kind of IP. Like, hey. Yeah. In a world of reboots, we're different.
And I love it.
It's super cool.
And then the last nationwide release is Hereditary,
uh-huh.
Which is the new A24 horror film with Toni Collette.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be like a possession family kind of horror film.
One of those, okay.
Yeah. And then you have Opening Unlimited, the Fred Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Oh, yeah.
And then you got... And then also Opening Unlimited is Hearts Beat Loud. I saw Hearts Beat Loud at the Atlanta Film Festival. Go check it out if you're in New York or L.A. It'll be out here in Atlanta sooner than later.
Speaking of festivals, we did talk about the last one, that Dead Winter's premiere, their trailer premiered. Look it up on Vimeo so you can see some of the handiwork of me and Jared.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's an incredible trailer.
Oh, yeah, it's so great. So now playing, we have Solo, which has apparently stumbled a little bit. They're bringing in $29.3 million in the box office this week.
Yes.
But that's still doing pretty good. I mean, it's not the greatest for a Star Wars movie, but, I mean, Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace actually did really good.
It did really well.
Episodes 1, 2, and 3 skyrocketed compared to the original trilogy.
But it's because everybody's like, this one's going to be the next good one. This one's going to be the next good one.
Well,
this one's
gonna be like Darth Maul.
Darth Maul was the best part of the first one. But remember,
it was easily the best part.
But Jar Jar Binks was in there. So you got to take off points for that.
I met somebody the other day. He said, oh, yeah, I love the Phantom Menace. Jar Jar Binks is my favorite character. And I kind of slowly walked away.
And then you ask them if they like their steaks well done. If they say yes, you just go ahead and murder them for the rest of the
with
world's
A1.
Population. I like it well done with ketchup.
A1? What?
You've never put A1 on a steak.
I would have said Heinz 57, I would kill you.
But oh, you're one of those people. Okay.
Heinz 57 is okay if you got a really thin steak. But on other news.
That's fair.
Deadpool 2 is bringing in $23.3 million.
The only movie to make me do 4 spit takes in one sitting.
Yeah.
What?
Still a great movie. I've watched it twice. Same. I can't wait to see what else spins out of that. Adrift is at 11.5. So that's not doing too bad. Avengers Infinity War still in the top five with $10.4 million. So it's still winning there. It's not dropped out all the way, but I think it's going to stay at least top five for another week or two. And Book Club, which I know nothing about, is at 6.8.
I've actually seen the movie.
How is it?
It's surprisingly good for what it is. It very much is like a disposable romantic comedy, but the acting and the dialogue is so, like, it's so perfect and so fine-tuned that you don't mind sitting there having fun for like 2 hours with these four old women who are reading 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, yeah, now I remember. I remember seeing a trailer for that.
Yeah, it's a fun movie.
Speaking of other things coming out, Luke Cage Season 2 is coming out on Netflix on June 8th.
Yes.
Incredibles 2 is coming out June 15th.
Finally.
So get ready for that. Which
14 years later.
I'm on the edge on that one because I'm like, it looks like it's going to be really good and really well done. But then I feel like this one's going to make a lot of references to the first one. And I want it to stand on its own 2 feet and not be a, hey, look, we remembered this.
No capes.
Yeah.
Well, to comment on Incredibles 2, I think it is a little too late to come in and try to do a straight sequel. I think if you would have done that.
You know why Disney's done this. They've done this with Finding Nemo as well and a couple other ones. They wait and they do the math, and they're smart about this. They say, if this movie comes out when you're in first grade, how long will it be till you're in college? Mm-hmm. And then they make the sequel.
Monsters University.
Monsters University. Incredibles 2. Then they do the Toy Story where Andy goes off to college.
There's another one coming out.
I know.
Oh, my God.
He's going to have his own kid. So the whole idea is they're pacing these where they're exactly timed where the first grade students would be probably in college or graduating high school. That's how they do it.
I know, but I think as a fan, I would have liked to have seen this become a trilogy like before I was out of college.
Honestly, I would have liked to see them aged up more. Because we're just getting into, it's in the trailer, Violet's entering her rowdy teenage years.
Yeah, and Jack's still a baby, and it's just like, I would have loved to see, like,
when the movie come out, 2004? Four.
Yeah.
I would have loved this to be, like, have, like, Violet working somewhere and have Dash maybe interning.
Well, I'm thinking, like, get Dash into high school, fully into high school, have her go off to college, leave the family, and show her a little bit of that, and then have them be, like, empty nest syndrome with the freaking baby who's now going to school. That's what I wanted to see, not stay-at-home dad.
It is stay-at-home dad, the movie.
Because empty nest syndrome there would be like, okay, cool, we can be superheroes now, and then we're like, well, we miss the family. Now it's like, she's going off doing things, and he's got to deal with the three rowdy still kids.
And then
kids.
It could be like...
That might be the third movie, Jordan.
It may be.
Maybe. But that'd be a big time skip from what's already happened.
Episode 9's going to have a big time skip, so who cares?
It's true.
I didn't know this, but okay.
So, another news, Tag will have a U.S. premiere on June 15th.
That looks hilarious.
It looks so funny for such a simple premise of they're playing Tag.
Well, it's based off a true story.
It's based off a true story.
These people are nuts.
Yeah, no, and... I love every actor in it. The, like, you have someone from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you have someone from Hangover, and someone from Mad Men. Like, three great things going on there, and you have all three of them together, plus you have Hawkeye. Like, this is going to be lit.
Yep, we now know why Hawkeye was not there. He was playing tag with his friend.
So he's going to go like, so we can't play tag with two people now.
I watched the video, and it was really funny of, why Hawkeye wasn't in Avengers, and they showed an animated thing when they fought Thanos, and he literally was just like, I have his pattern figured out, and he was just timing it and then shooting, and Thanos would appear and just hit him in the face, and then eventually Thor drops his hammer on Thanos' face, and then they take off his gauntlet, and it's just like, that's why he wasn't there. He literally defeated Thanos in like 30 seconds, because he could figure out the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of superheroes, Stan Lee face down two gunmen outside his L.A. home. So that's a thing. Apparently they wanted money from him. And keeping on that, Benedict Cumberbatch also was in a fight with four muggers that are trying to attack a cyclist, and he helped them. So, like, superheroes are being superheroes outside of superheroes.
Stan Lee, we don't deserve him.
No, he is ancient, but still doing really well for himself. And it's just like, what? Where are you on that's making you live this long? I don't want to jinx it, but like...
Maybe he has like tea time with Keanu Reeves or something.
I don't know. But like, he's been around forever, and he's still destructive. I mean, he had some health issues recently, but like, Doesn't look like it fazed him. He looks better than his brother, who's younger than him. So, I mean, we have this is the ups. We have people doing good that are celebrities. Also, the downs. Roseanne. Sorry. Yeah. I was thinking Toto. anyone want to touch on that for a second?
I don't know exactly. I did not see the
exact... So, I've watched a lot of the original Roseanne. The old sitcom Roseanne, and it is probably one of the best, like, sitcoms out there. Like, even now you can go back and watch and enjoy yourself. This one was, it's the same thing that happened with Fuller House, where they tried to encompass what made the show so great, but it wasn't, they tried adding too many new stuff. Like, there were, of course, like, relevant politic jokes and whatnot in there, but I think that kind of turned off a lot of like the returning audience, was them trying to appeal to our generation as well as those that were already in love with Roseanne. And I actually watched, I think it's Smosh, I don't actually remember who does it, but they did, they do the React channel.
Yeah.
And they had Roseanne cast react to the cancellation notice.
That's cruel as fuck.
Well, no, they knew about it, but it was just like their reasonings and stuff like that. And they all, some of them agreed that it wasn't a good reboot, but to them, they were all like saddened and whatnot because they got the family back together, and this was like a whole huge thing because Roseanne had gone on for freaking ever. But.
But yeah, I mean, well, the thing is about Roseanne is that Roseanne has done stunts like this before, or publicity stunts, if you want to even call this a publicity stunt, has done this before, even before the whole reboot had happened. And so there was question as to, well, why did ABC let her back in, especially if, you know, she's known for, you know, having, you know, not Nazi-friendly jokes. I think she, correct me if I'm wrong, if anyone knows this, but didn't she go on didn't sing the national anthem while touching her clit?
What?
I think that happened.
No. That was somebody else. Roseanne, there was a thing with that. She went out there and she sang it as badly as possible.
Okay.
Like, she purposely sang it terribly. And people were just, like, livid with her about it. Mm-hmm. But she's just, like, she just kind of, like, shrugged it off. She's just like, hey, it's who I am.
But the thing about Roseanne is that her comments, this is the, it affected a whole show. And it affected, that's why, and you just can't say the things that she said anymore. You can't say those anymore without consequences. And I will, the biggest tragedy of the cancellation is that people will not get paid for next season, because I think all of us know that Roseanne was picked up for, I think it was season 10 or 11, whatever was going to be the next season.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's not going to happen unless, like, Fox pulls a Last Man Standing.
Well, it's a season. John Goodman's very interested in doing a spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a joke about that, but he is interested in doing his own thing with a daytime show.
There's ways around it, but still, it's called Roseanne, and the actress's name is Roseanne. It's all tied to her, and, you know, and part of the show was her.
Frasier, whatever, that was a spinoff, and that was off of, Cheers?
Right, but his character in Roseanne at the end of the previous season had died, so it's already, like, awkward. But it's an awkward situation for them to, if they wanted to figure out a way to come back. So it's sad that a lot of people are going to lose their jobs and not get paid. But, I mean, this is the consequences of...
putting all your eggs in one basket.
Right, and also being immature.
Yeah. Speaking of being immature... and speaking to being too young,
what I do.
Deadpool 2 star Julian Dinsman has announced that he's joining the Godzilla vs. Kong movie, which I was laughing at that because he's too young to actually see Deadpool 2, which he starred in as Fire Fist. What do you guys think of this? They're getting ready to make this next film.
Go ahead.
I want it to have more focus than Godzilla did on the actual, like, monsters. Because I don't want them to do like the Godzilla anime that came out last year where it was just like you got to see 5 minutes of Godzilla in the entirety of an hour and a half movie.
The Netflix one? No, keep in mind, they're going to be going with more King Kong style where you saw him throughout the film.
Good.
And there's a sequel before a Godzilla sequel before this one comes
Godzilla
out.
Yeah, Godzilla King of the Monsters, which will be going, it's actually in production now. Also, people, you'll like this. Part of the writing team for the Godzilla vs. Kong movie is one of the co-writers for the Pirates of the Caribbean original movie.
Perfect.
Other writers include Patrick McKay and J.D. Pine from Star Trek Beyond.
Okay.
A couple of people that worked on Maze Runner, Transcendent, Babylon 5. The director is going to be...
Adam Wingard.
Yeah. Which, if you remember, he worked on VHS, A Horrible Way to Die, ABCs of Death. So he's got an anthology of all these films that he's done that are very dark. He also directed the reboot of the Blair Witch Project.
And The Guest, and You're Next.
He's also working on Sony's Venom.
Good. So
he knows how to not. I thought he was working on that.
No, he's not working on Venom. That's Ruben Fleischer.
He's one of the producers.
Is he?
Yeah, that's what I have here. He's working on it. He's part of it.
Okay. But
either way, he has a long history of making things creepy, things monstrous, and things that are just downright weird. So you match that up together with the writers he has and two of the largest monsters in film history. I think this is going to be awesome.
As a kaiju fanatic yourself, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be going to the theater with you.
Yes.
Because I want to see your reaction.
I'll just videotape. Because
you looked like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, yeah.
When we saw Skull Island.
Oh, yeah. No, that's great. So here's what I have in my head of what's going to happen with this. They've already announced Mothra, Rodan, and King Ghidorah.
Yeah.
So they have next Godzilla movie, kind of showing them off a little bit. Some other kaiju, maybe. Mm-hmm. We may see King Ghidorah. We may see something else. I don't think they're going to throw Mothra and Rodan at them. In an early film, I think they're saving one of those for a big battle. Then we have the Kong versus Godzilla. They're going to hint at some more kaiju, maybe something else we didn't even know of. And then they're going to have a Destroy All Monsters. Because that was one of the original movies that came out under the Toho label, Destroy All Monsters, which at that point had every single kaiju in Japan's like library that they had access to, all in one movie fighting each other with aliens. And secret agent governments.
Good.
So that's going to be awesome. It can't be any worse than Godzilla Final War, which was trash. And basically just an anime film that had monsters in the background that were CGI'd. So I have a fine palate for monster movies.
I liked the Godzilla movie that came out a while back.
The 2004 one?
2014.
I was about to say, don't say 2001. I will hit you.
Is that the one where it's Mama Godzilla?
No, that's Zilla. Just straight up Zilla. Not Godzilla.
Okay. I remember liking that one.
And the Kong Skull Island movie was really good.
It was very good.
Beyblade.
It was really good. I liked what Jordan Voight Roberts brought to it.
I think what it benefited there is that not only had a great cast, but they showed the monster enough where you felt like he was a part of that cast.
He belonged in the setting.
Because, I mean, the cast they had, each one of them could hold the film themselves. Tom Hiddleston did great in it. But you had moments where it's just like, there's little monsters that the humans are interacting with. And it scales up to a larger creature fighting Kong, who is a representation of the humans. He is, he's the guardian. And so I like that style of, like, the monster is with the people. And Godzilla, it was the problem where the Godzilla's doing his own thing, the humans are doing their own thing. It just coincided that they were near each other.
And they were, like, after the same...
Yeah, they just happened to be together. And then Kong was, he is directly with them.
The only thing I had a problem with the newer Godzilla movie was that it was just like, hey, cool, everything's destroyed. Bye, Godzilla. And Godzilla's just like, later, dude.
He just walks, he just leaves.
There's like...
So, it's one of those where I hope that with them seeing that Kong did so well, that they'll show the monsters more. Now, if you remember the original Godzilla vs. King Kong, that film, bless it, showed a lot of the monsters. But the fights were absolutely ridiculous because instead of going with high-quality costuming like they did for the Godzilla movies, they got a high-quality Godzilla movie and King Kong in a literally gorilla suit. They turned slightly purple and he beats up an octopus. And it's not even like the it's like a literally legit octopus they put on set and he kills the octopus on set. And they scale it down to size, and they green screen in a little girl screaming inside of a hut to make it look like he's large. It is atrocious. That's also animal cruelty. They cannot put on the end of the movie that they were animal friendly because they actually killed an octopus on set.
What?
Yeah, he eats it, but legit octopus, like do an octopus thing, going please don't kill me. He beats it on the ground.
Okay, Jordan.
that was the original one.
Okay, wow. Jared, do you have anything else?
I'm a little stunned from this piece. I gotta research that.
I will show you the scene.
Wow,
after this.
I thought the Roseanne thing would be a big thing.
No,
it would be a big controversial thing.
Nope, octopus.
You guys talk about another topic for Sam.
So the Suspiria remake has come out with a new trailer or a teaser, and it's not as it doesn't look as colorful as the original Dario Argento film, but damn, it looks creepy and eerie, and it looks like an old 1970s horror film. And are you two aware of Suspiria at all? Okay, for our listeners, Suspiria is a 1977 giallo horror film where this, you know, American immigrant is coming to, I think it's Berlin, to learn ballet, and she's going to this ballet school, and while she's there, a bunch of other girls are getting brutally murdered through weird circumstances.
As they do.
Yes. And throughout the movie, she is becoming, you know, more and more brilliant, but more and more girls are dying. So it's up to her to figure out what's happening, and I guess this is pretty much in the culture now, but the Suspiria, but the twist at the end is the teachers are witches, and they're basically making, and they all want to, like, kill the ballerina, girls to stay young, so, or something like that.
And what's the name of this movie?
Suspiria.
It's French?
It sounds familiar.
It's Italian.
Italian.
It's giallo.
It does sound really familiar.
It's a beautiful looking horror movie, and it's creepy. It has goblin music, or goblin soundtrack. It's wonderful, and this one's directed by Luca Guadagnino. This remake is directed by Luca Guadagnino, who did recently Call Me By Your Name, and it just looks fascinating. And if you've heard of what the CinemaCon footage was, where a girl is just basically brutally, like, you know, smashed and contorted everywhere. Yeah, it's going to be a wild ride.
I'm down for this. I'm cool for some witchy horror stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then the other trailer that just came out today is Widows with Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, and Elizabeth Debicki. And it's from the author of Gone Girl. And she's writing the script, and it's directed by Steve McQueen, who brought us 12 Years a Slave. And it's wonderful. And it's a wonderful trailer. It's one of the most anticipated movies of the year, as well as Suspiria. So we got a bunch of November stuff today. As far as other movie news, there's not that much going on. There's going to be some reconfiguring, you know, with the Solo films because of Solo. But other than that, there's not much significance. Oh, Jake Gyllenhaal will most likely be Mysterio in Spider-Man.
Oh, nice.
I have a big problem with Mysterio as a villain.
What's your beef?
What's your beef? He's a normal dude. He's. There's a few different versions of Mysterio, and I hope it's one of the good ones, where Mysterio actually like has powers and he's like this Batman-esque like super smart dude. Because a lot of times Mysterio is just put in there as a joke character. Because, for example, my first interaction with Mysterio was I played the Spider-Man 2 video game, the old GameCube one, and he is basically like, "Wow, I'm gonna do all these cool traps. Ooh, aliens are coming down." He's just like, "I'm an alien overlord," kind of thing. And he gets taken out in one punch, and he's just literally just wearing a fishbowl that's covered in fog. It's just... And in the comics, a lot of times he has not been any different from that. So I hope they actually, like, do something with it. Or, like, they don't do fishbowl. I hope they don't do the fishbowl. That'll probably make me upset.
I'm showing Jared the octopus King Kong thing. I fast-forwarded.
This is a live octopus, but it's the most fake-looking octopus.
It's a live octopus, and then
it's a live octopus.
Guy in a monkey suit.
It's literally a guy in a monkey suit. Oh my god.
And yeah.
he just picks up the octopus.
It's going in reverse. Yep. So we're going to be talking about video game news here in a second for E3 speculations. It'll be probably one of our last topics before we hop over to the interview. So I will put in a timestamp where you guys can see that in the description. So they're enjoying the scene. He's got people with a rock now.
It's the same CGI rock over and over.
Dear God.
And Kale, why don't you talk about what you're going to be... Just hint at what you're going to be talking about in your show later this week. And give a little blip for Youth Critic.
Well, let's see. I haven't watched any of the new releases yet. So I haven't seen Adrift, but I'm going to probably see it. And then Upgrade. So we'll talk about one of those two movies. But on next Sunday, we'll talk about Super Mario Brothers movie and Cliffhanger for episode 2 of our retrospectives.
Wait, the original? Original? Super Mario Brothers?
Yes, with Bob Hawkins and John Leguizamo.
Oh my god.
That movie's atrocious.
It's, you know what, I've seen it, and it's kind of, what's odd is, you know, and this is a really big sneak peek, its production is very much like Solo, where the directors got kicked out like weeks before they finished filming, and so they had to bring in someone to come in and finish, and then the producers finished the movie in post. So, and they had these directors were fucking on, were fucking insane. Sorry I keep cursing on your show, Jordan. But they were insane. They wanted strippers in the movie. They wanted, like, orgies. They wanted it more adult rather than kid.
It's Mario.
Prince Peach is in another Big castle. Bertha is a...
She's in my castle.
I mean, Big Bertha is a big black lady in, like, very tight leather, red leather outfit. So, I mean, it's just, like, it's an insane movie.
I still can't get over the design of Bowser.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He looks like a bad burn patient victim.
It's an odd movie, but somehow still boring as fuck.
Well, speaking of video games, let's talk about E3. And should we hit on what's already been announced so far? So earlier this past week, Fallout 76 has been announced as an online survival RPG. Now, keep in mind, this is the largest production group to make a survival RPG. You've had Rust, and you've had a couple other ones like that, but this one's probably the biggest company that's making one. I'm excited to see what they do, but at the same time, I'm like, please don't ruin the IP. You did that to Skyrim.
I mean, you're right. I mean, having another Fallout is everybody's dream, because Fallout New Vegas is something I've played a lot of.
I played a lot of Fallout 3.
So, I am not opposed to it. Fallout 4 had a pretty good story.
Yeah.
And that's usually what I base a game on. But as long as it's not like they don't go like too out there like they did with Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah, Elder Scrolls Online is just trash.
I think they'll be fine.
Fair enough. They haven't said a whole lot about it other than it's going to be a survival app.
Oh, yeah, and it's also Bethesda, so speedrunners get ready for clipping.
Yeah. They're like, it's going to be a complete game on launch. No patches.
Okay. I'm going to stop you right there. This is Bethesda.
There'll be a patch before it even comes out.
We will break your game, Bethesda.
We do it every time.
Every time.
I broke Skyrim in like 20 minutes as soon as they said mods are available for Xbox. I'm like, cool, how quick can I break this?
Wait, not just mods, just incomplete coding.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a speedrun of Skyrim. It was in one of the first few patches. You could literally walk through doors by holding a plate. That's how broken it is.
One of my favorite ones is in Oblivion, if you dropped an item and then you moved an item or something like that, you could make a you fired an arrow, dropped an item, you can make a clone of it. And so, like, there's also glitches where if you dropped a paintbrush, it would stay in one spot, and you can make stairs. There was a lot of glitches, and Bethesda's just like, eventually you will learn your games are not, they're great. They're great games. You do so much work in it, but you're not perfect. Hire another company to make it perfect.
Well, don't hire another company, because here's the thing. That's how Andromeda got released.
No, what I'm saying is you go through and you make the game to your completion. Then you just have someone go through and go, hey, you missed a spot. I'm not saying like...
So you mean don't release the alpha and have beta testers?
Yeah. Because every game that they've released has been like, here's the game. And it's like, okay.
Pretty much the alpha release.
There is so many things wrong with this. And they're just like, we'll fix it later. We'll give you a DLC that'll fix all these problems. It's like, I don't want to pay for that. Speaking of other games coming out, so there's actually three total Pokemon games they've announced. One for mobile, and basically it plays itself. You have little creatures and you can activate their abilities, but they're like pixel cube versions of your Pokemon, right?
Uh-huh. As you mean like 8-bit?
No, they're like, hold on, I will show you. I have video.
He's showing us a video, and it's,
Okay. It's close to,
Crossy Road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, they've also announced Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee, which will have a crossover with,
Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go. Which, so, your Pokemon will not move over to it, but you'll have access to. Just keep that in mind. So you'll be able to interact, but you can't use them in a battle.
This is what we needed when Pokemon Go came out, was a battling system.
And now,
a good battling system.
What they're doing is, the battle system is exactly the same as it is in the RPG.
No,
so you still, no.
Oh, and as in the RPG.
You still have
turn-based. Okay.
You still have turn-based.
Perfect.
But the way you catch Pokemon is now different. You don't battle them and weaken them. You just use your little joystick thing.
Yeah, you do the Pokemon Go method of just throwing.
So, and you actually can see them moving around. So what it is it's basically a port of Pokemon Pikachu Yellow Edition that they have updated, upgraded, put all the new abilities in, but it's still Kanto region and still technically the same game, but with all these new features on top of it. So all the battles are the same, all the people are in the same places, other than Alola forms will be new access in Kanto.
Alola.
Whatever. But there are...
The Alola forms are going to be there?
They'll be accessible. So only if you've caught the version of it, I believe, in the Pokemon Go version.
But we don't have access to...
You do? We'll soon.
Gen 7. Are you guys soon, talking? We just released Gen 3.
No, I'm saying the original 151, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you have one of those, they have Alola forms. If you have one of those that has Alola form and your Pokemon Go, you can get the Alola form in the Let's Go. It's complicated.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because the only ones you're going to really have access is like Exeggutor and Pikachu and some of those, you know. Which, there's rumors that the Pokemon, either Eevee or Pikachu, you get at the beginning of the game won't even evolve. Where there's still speculation.
That's terrible for Eevee.
That's terrible for Eevee. It's literally, its job is to evolve.
See, like,
it's the evolution.
All Eevee gets is, I'm going to show my Pokemon nerdiness here. All he really gets is Trump card at level 57, and that's
that doesn't do anything, and I'm pretty sure they're not going to have mega stones in here if it's since it's the way that they do the battling. So you're not even going to get your extreme Evo boost. So there's no point in
nerd.
The other thing there is they're going to be releasing they can carry your Switch controllers away from the Switch. If you have, they'll have special controllers that look like Pokeballs, where the center dot is your joystick, and you can play with it, and it'll make noises as your Pikachu or Eevee, and it'll level up and travel with you and be more friendly with you, which means people are going to be traveling around with Pokeballs that have Pokemon inside. Not like the old, like, little, you know,
Tamagotchi. Yeah, I remember they had that little Tamagotchi thing.
No, this is like, it will talk and make noises, and the more you mess with it, the better it'll go, and you can change out the Pokemon inside of it. So this one will actually talk to each other, and they're talking about if you get your Switch close enough to someone else's Switch, they'll interact.
That's cool. My only problem is that I don't really feel safe driving down the road when some kid's going to have, like, their Switch in their hand, and they're going to be like, oh, look, there's a Pidgeotto across the road.
Sham! Well, you can only catch if you're, you know, playing the Switch.
I know, but Switch is portable.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to be driving with the Switch. And
no, he's talking about the kid having the Switch, and he's walking across the street.
It's not going to work where you travel around with the Switch to catch Pokemon. You catch Pokemon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
You catch Pokemon in game.
It's in game. I'm still thinking it's Pokemon Go.
No, Pokemon Go. You can interact with. You can play with Pokemon, but you can't use them. Other things have been announced for E3. So let's go down the list. Sony, they've announced a few games, specifically The Last of Us Part 2, which the first part may be made into a film. Keep that in mind, Kale.
I am 100% on that. That is such a good cinematic, like, narrative.
Essentially, Kale, this is a world where a older man and a younger... Is his daughter or a girl he just adopts? I can't remember.
So... minor spoilers for the literal opening part of the section. Like, Joel, his daughter gets killed by the government because they found that the contagion was starting there.
Yeah.
But it becomes like old man Logan, where it becomes like a pseudo daughter figure, and he basically becomes the pseudo father figure.
So like Logan.
It's basically old man Logan, but with realistic humans
and zombies
and guns.
This sounds cool.
The zombies are called clickers. Like, basically, it's a fungus.
Honestly, you can go watch a no-commentary walkthrough of this game, and it looks like you're just watching a movie.
It's very well
beautiful.
Done. From Microsoft, there is some talks that they're going to release and the second part to Halo 5. So, you know, Halo 5,
Part 2. They're breaking it out into Part 2?
Well, remember, it ends in a cliffhanger.
They all live in cliffhangers.
I know, but this one directly ends in a cliffhanger. So they're talking about, like, doing something where it's either, I don't think they're gonna jump to a 6,
because if they get to 6, it's gonna be the end, because they only were promised a trilogy.
Yeah.
So let me ask this:
Halo 5 is also a good narrative. I really enjoyed it. We got to see the Arbiter again, but I don't like how they're doing. Like, I would understand if they like did the whole thing like how Harry Potter had Deathly Hallows Part 1, Part 2 for, like, the ending part, but I don't know how I feel about a split in the middle.
Yeah. The other thing going on there is the Xbox One may be able to connect to your Alexa soon, and so that may be integrated, which would be kind of cool. I don't know if I want my Xbox listening to me. Not all the time.
So, you gotta put the tape over the Kinect so the government can't spy on you.
I don't have a Kinect hooked up to it for that reason. So let's see here. So Halo 6 is what Halo they're kind of saying will serve as the final chapter of the 343 Industries post Bungie trilogy. Gears of War 5 might be shown. Fable 4 may make an appearance. And the Halo Lens, which is a VR for the Xbox, may be shown. And if they do, they're going to show a lot of content. So it's either all or nothing.
Cool.
If they show it, they'll be pumping out the content because they want that, get that out with stuff to play on it as fast as possible. For Nintendo, we always talk about the Pokemon, and Kirby and Yoshi maybe getting their own things, own adventures.
They're redoing, I think I heard a rumor that they're doing the Yarn Yoshi one.
Yep. Animal Crossing may get a Switch.
Woolly World, that's the
one. May get a Switch ability.
That makes perfect sense.
Metroid Prime 4.
We're getting Metroid Prime 4!
They will not be announcing a core Pokemon RPG until probably next year.
That's fine.
Which means it's good, because they're going to tide us over with these smaller games and some reboots and some new mechanics that'll get us ready for a 3DS or Switch new game, which I think is great, because that means we're not rushing out to get something new, and they have time to make something that's not a freaking dishwasher Pokemon that exists.
It's not a dishwasher.
It's a washing machine.
It's a photon that has the ability to take over machinery.
But it looks like a dishwasher.
Because it takes over a dishwasher. It also takes over a furnace. It also
and a fridge and a lawnmower.
It's a Why are you hating on Rotom? Rotom is a really cool design for a Pokemon. It's a ghost that takes over electronic devices.
They have an ice cream.
That one is actually an inside joke within Game Freak.
They literally go,
fight me.
They go, it's a thing. It's a Pokemon now.
That's entirely wrong. I'll fight you over that.
Also, the Pokemon Labo. It's going to be possibly showing some more stuff. EA, they got another Madden, another FIFA, another NFL, another NBA.
Ooh, same game.
So if you're a sports fan, there's all these sports games. Maybe a new Battlefield may be shown. An Anthem, which is supposed to be their monster hunting. Is it made by the Canadian developers of BioWare, which they're everything that's wrong with Mass Effect Andromeda. Also, they probably messed up Destiny somehow. Just saying that.
I have news after we're done with the E3 stuff.
All right. For Ubisoft, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which will be a Greek version.
Finally.
Splinter Cell may have a new thing, and I think they're having the same voice actor return.
Okay.
Nothing really else besides there, except for maybe a Rainbow Siege 2, which the first one's doing really well. I like that game. But it's getting old. Yeah, they needed to update it with some new stuff. Bethesda, obviously they're talking about the Fallout new game. Rage 2, they may show something else. They haven't hinted, but with them coming out of Fallout 76 so early, they may announce a bigger game actually at the conference, because they're not going to announce something early and then announce it again. That's not how Bethesda rolls. Because they're always like, here's a thing, and you can play it now. Because they did that with the mobile game.
Mm-hmm.
Square Enix, we may finally get Kingdom Hearts 3, also Final Fantasy 7 Remake.
Get another one.
And Shadow of the Tomb Raider. So, that's all the E3 news I have so far. We'll talk about more later. But what other news do you guys have before we wrap this up and get to your interview after?
So while we are still on the topic of gaming, I heard that the next Call of Duty Black Ops is going to be run by Blizzard.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be on the Blizzard
engine. Well, I mean, Blizzard owns Activision.
Mm-hmm. But it's going to be made by the same team that made Overwatch.
Oh. So hopefully it won't be an Overwatch clone.
It won't be, because it's not going to be a first-person MOBA, but I hope that they do get rid of a lot of the BS that kind of turned me away from the series.
So I liked some of the earlier Call of Duties, like Call of Duty 3. I really liked that one. I prestiged in it, but it's because it was so simple and straightforward. And then you get to all those new Black Ops and all stuff.
Well, Black Ops 1 is, in my opinion, the best Black Ops game that has come out, because it was balanced. It was good maps, good story, zombies, yay.
Yeah.
Black Ops 2 was still okay. I like that they expanded zombies mode for, and they actually made them humongous maps, so you actually felt like it was a survival. I was not a fan of them introducing parkour and jetpacks and whatnot.
Well, they also made Star Wars Battlefield, same company.
Battlefront,
sorry.
Yeah.
Same difference.
But we already have a... if the game looks good, me and all of my people at my work are going to be building a team.
Oh, fair.
So I'm hoping to.
Kale, do you have any news before we wrap up?
Yes. We did not get a chance to watch this before the show, but the new Ralph Breaks the Internet trailer... For Wreck-It Ralph. Has dropped, and go check it out, because Wreck-It Ralph was a fun, incredible movie. I don't know what your guys' thoughts were.
I like villains becoming the good guys.
I thought it was fun, but I've never rewatched it, if that gives you an idea. Like, yeah. I thought it's like,
oh, it's a great experience that you will remember, but you're not going to watch it.
I go, oh, yeah, that was cool. And then I'm done.
I've seen it twice. It's good.
Yeah. It's not one I go back and rewatch. I liked it, but it's not a rewatcher. Disney, like, it was cool, but it was cool for, like, if you did a short. I don't feel like it the full film just kind of lost me on it, because there's a lot of moments where you just go, oh, they're just making a reference to this game. Oh, they're just making a reference to this game.
So, like, an animated Ready Player One.
Yeah, like, it's what Ready Player One should have been.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Because I love the book just for Ready Player One.
Throwing shade.
Ready Player One, the movie, was great and simultaneously bad. I love the movie. I was smiling throughout the entire movie. That was so cool. Giant Mechagodzilla and Gundam. And I was like, that was awesome. And then, I let it sink in and I go, there's a lot of trash in there between the good stuff.
Yeah, it didn't follow the movie. I didn't follow the book. So now,
granted, the sequence for The Shining was downright amazing.
That was really good.
That was so amazing.
Best scene in the movie.
Best scene in the entire movie. That was amazing. And the final battle scene was cool. But the first challenge was lame. And the sequel...
Well, any gamer could figure that out in, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We have speedrunners for a reason.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of points in that where it's just like, this is unneeded and it wasn't in the book. Please go away. So, that's about how I feel about it. But I still think just alone that sequence where they recreated parts of The Shining was amazing. And they should get props for that because that was so well done. Why did they not do more of that? It doesn't have to be all movie sequence, but there is four movie sequences in the book.
Yep.
Yeah. So, hi. I guess we'll wrap it up. This has been Jordan.
And Jared.
Kale.
And we're going to have an interview directly after this with Jared. So have a good week. We'll see you next week. And hopefully we'll have Kalen on there. All right. Bye. Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Stop it and I'll get my hard drive and save it. Let's make sure Kate's actually a record. Okay, and we're joined with Jared Cool.
Hello.
He is the director / writer / a little bit of everything this week. So we're going to go ahead and start asking some questions.
Okay.
Do you want to tell a little bit about yourself real quick?
I'm 6'2", single, good looking.
And he likes long walks on the beach.
Like long walks on the beach.
All right, so we're going to ask you a few questions. This is some simple questions, and we're just going to be... give me a little insight on the creators here in North Georgia, the creators here at the university, and giving a little bit of behind the scenes of some stories, like what's on set, what it's like to be a part of the film process for the listeners who have never gotten the chance to or have always been curious what it's like to be part of a film. And these are the people who create the films. These are the directors, the producers, the cinematographers, writers. And so we're going to start off. So what got you into film?
You.
Be a little more, what was, like...
Well, before you, it was, I've always been a big fan of, the movie magic and stuff. Like, when you see, when a camera looks into the mirror and they crop themselves out, like they do in stuff like Black Swan, that, blows my mind. Like, stuff like that, I'm a huge fan of long takes, there's, all these... I loved the cinema aesthetics before I was a film student. So that's kind of what got me into it.
Fair enough, fair enough. So these aesthetics you like the part of the technical side to it as well.
Oh, God, yes.
So it's what makes it tick. And there's a lot of people that like that. A lot of people that they feel that what makes films so interesting is the fact that the film itself is technical. There's an art to it, the same thing like art to music, and there's art to paintings. But because we are in a science-driven field, yes, we're making art, but there's a science behind it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the things I'm going to really look forward to this is that since it's an ever-changing career, there's
not really going to be like a bad year. Like something cool is going to come out. Something new is going to come out. Even if like I'm working on a production that I don't like, there will still be like a film I can go see and I would love it. And I would know what would be going on.
One of my favorite quotes about that is without, you know, without light, without certain elements, we would just have radio. And so that technical is that something new is always being created. Something's adding. Like when we had 3D, when we had the low frequency that make the stomp of the T-Rex so energizing from
sound design.
So you have all these little elements, you know, and I think that really adds to it. So movies that have influenced your career in film, what movies have been a really big draw to you?
My favorite kind of cinema aesthetic is the long take. So like...
the Steven Spielberg Warner?
Yeah. What is it? Children of Men?
Mm-hmm.
Kingsman? Even though it's a false long take, it still is really cool to me.
Would Birdman fall in that category? It is one entire long take, but it's cut up by using the props, essentially, to cut up the shot.
Yes. And Baby Driver, I'm a huge fan of, like, pacing long takes, even though they're really, really hard to do, especially if you're doing it to, like, a beat. Because you don't need just one person to be on time. You need everybody to be on time. That's where your second 80 comes in handy.
Timing is very important. Is there any other films that have influenced your filmmaking, the films you like to create?
Well, I am a big fan of the superhero genre. I love Marvel, don't get me wrong, but I kind of like the older stuff. Like, say, like Hancock. I'm a big fan of Hancock. My guilty pleasure is Ghost Rider, even though the second one is trash. Ghost Rider is one of those that is just like, I can make it better, and that's a drive for me. I'm also a fan of Psycho. I don't really watch many old movies, except for like research, but like I'm a big fan of Hitchcock.
And there's a lot of people there, and I think what makes it so distinct and why we study him so much is because he had that style where everything had to be his own brand.
Oh, the man was insane.
The man was completely insane. But that's what makes it so unique. You know, it's like you watch a Tarantino or you watch, you know, a Hitchcock in that situation. Mm-hmm. Or you like the wonders of Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
His movies have a certain feel. So what was the last film you worked on? What was the last thing you worked on, and what's your thoughts coming out of that?
The last big thing I worked on was the... Let's see. What was the best thing I worked on? Last thing I worked on was a small comic book shop movie. It was a little love story. It was a student production. I was camera and director for it. I got to meet the cast. I actually kind of knew the cast already because we filmed at the same comic book shop I go to all the time. And it was a fun experience. A lot of hiccups. Somebody forgot to bring Tascam batteries or batteries in general. So we only had a limited amount of time, but it was fun to work on a crunch.
For the listeners, a Tascam is what they use to record sound on smaller projects.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite moments on a film, or film set specifically?
On a film set or in the movie themselves?
On a film set, your personal experience. What's your favorite moment if you had to look back and you're telling somebody, like, why did you join film? What makes it so great?
Oh, I'm kind of... The setup is okay, but, like, as soon as you, like, hit camera roll, once somebody yells action, that's when everything gets cool because everybody around them gets super quiet. All the different kinds of technology all flare up, the camera's on, and then it's just you're watching the film itself being made. And it doesn't really look too impressive at first. But, like, you know that what is being shown right then and there is going to be one of the greatest things that you will be ever be working on.
You're leaving a legacy.
Yes. So, like, you see George Clooney. George Clooney is cool. But George Clooney just talking and walking around, say, like a stage actor, it's cool, but it's not that impressive. But once everything is put together through the magic of editing, After Effects, music, score, all these different collaborations, it just turns into something beautiful.
Okay. That's a really good explanation to that. What kind of stories do you like to tell?
I like two really big stories. I kind of like the big bad stories, which is like, for example, Avengers. Loki is the big bad. It's all kind of centralized, like everybody is after this one person. I'm a big fan of that, but I'm also a fan of, say, something like a good example of my favorite kind of character to write and to see is somebody, say, like Zuko from Avatar: Last Airbender. I like the huge big bad that actually kind of redeems himself at the end. I like the turncoats. I like the bad guys that become the good guys. They join them the next season, the anti-heroes. They learn that what they're doing is not correct. They learn about themselves, because we can learn a lot more from the villains than we can the heroes.
Okay. What position or positions do you like to have on a film set? What is your go-to if you're getting recruited for a film? Where would you want to be?
Oh, directing. Directing and writing. I like the creative side. I like doing the story. I like adapting stories. I like the vision part of it. I would also like to be a producer, getting stuff done, because that's a very nice field to work in. Lots of things. You're never really bored. But having, like, everybody dreams to be the big director Steven Spielberg. I'm going to try my best to get there one day.
All right. As a director, is there an element, a style, or cinematic that is characteristic to your films? Is there something when someone watches it, they go, that's a Jared film?
I'm kind of working on a way to do long takes. I'm trying to implement it to my next big project, Phantom. I'm trying to do a way to, like, work with the zoom on long takes where, say, like, in Kingsman, or, like, in most fighting movies, there's always, like, a sound effect, or my favorite way to show the power of a punch is a quick zoom-in, mm-hmm. like a one- or two-frame zoom-in done in post. I'm trying to find a way to do that during a long take. Mm-hmm. So.
And that, I figured that would attribute itself to pacing and timing and the way the camera moves around the actors as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Favorite films you have worked on? What are some of your favorite films you've worked on, and what stories can you tell about that? Is there a funny moment from one? Is there just the action of it? Is there a part of the film?
One thing that I really enjoyed when we were doing our 48 hour was that I loved how we were just all staying in character and whatnot. I was playing Agent Red, and we had our old friend Danilo, and we had we were just filming, and all of a sudden, just he kicked the pool table and whatnot, and he broke the pool table on set, but we just kept going because nobody knew but him, and you could see in his eyes that there was
that,
like, a change.
That clip actually made it into the final edit of the film. It's
that face. It's your on those face. That was very funny. We also did some green screening for... what was it? It was a Nutcracker horror movie. I think the director's name was Brett.
Oh, Brett Beaver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I have seen that. It's actually very
funny. It is hilarious. And we did the green screening for the Nutcrackers themselves. And it was hilarious because we were working with Jason Wynn in the Production One class. And Jason was so adamant about keeping the camera protected, which you should be because cameras are expensive, that, like, you could see him, like, almost, like, jolting to, like, as you, like, swat a wasp or a fly, because we had the Nutcracker zooming towards the camera by strings, which means we didn't have a way to stop it. So we had some plexiglass just ready, but
having Wynn just like completely on edge the whole time because we were using black magic. It was hilarious.
And if you don't know, he's the director for Dead Winter as well.
Yeah, Jason Wynn. Not me. I wish.
No, he's the director for Dead Winter, and he's done a few other the Fat Boy Chronicles, and he's got another one which is a very very heavy drama coming out, which he's teased. I've got the chance to see the trailer before anybody else. I'm so excited about it. It looks really good. I would check him out. He's got some work he's working on. He's done some documentaries, so I would definitely look him up. Okay. So what are you currently working on? What is your current project?
Right now, pre-production for Phantom. I'm right now just breaking down everything, trying to make sure what props we need, trying to figure out how to do a car crash on a low budget. College kids. And I'm also going to be I'm gonna be the best boy grip for Dead Winter when we get around to it this late February.
And what films are you planning to start on? What films do you aspire to do? Is there one you got in your back pocket you're ready to whip out the moment you got some money or a good crew or a good camera?
Oh, if I ever got, like, say, like a Marvel budget, I have my own superhero movie I want to do. It doesn't follow the Marvel formula. It's a lot more serious. It deals with a man named Joseph, and like he's similar in kind to Power Man, but it's basically if you take the Super Soldier Serum. Okay, no, it's like if the enemy is closer to Syndrome from The Incredibles, where if one person has to be super, why can't everybody be super? Kind of style, where it's just like the good of the nation, but when everybody's super, no one is.
All right. And a final question, and this is unique to each person that we interview. So,
yes, I'm single.
If you had to be the actual, live out the character of one of your characters you have written, who would it be?
Man. I write too many tragic stuff.
So if you had to live the life of one of your characters, who would it be? Crap. And why?
I would have to say there was this, in my, writing for media class, I was in a group of three people and we did this funny kind of like a priest goes back to college kind of thing to kind of expel demons. And we had this demon in there, and his name was Walt. And he was basically like if David Tennant was more serious. Like when he's Purple Man. Mm-hmm. But he's a good guy. But at first he's seen as the bad guy. Like that's kind of like my favorite character. And he's a demon. He's kind of been like shoved down by the higher up demons. He's basically the janitor at the college. But slowly as he progresses, he actually gets a nice relationship going on with the main character, Carlos, and they become like the best of friends, which you wouldn't expect like a demon hunting priest and a demon to be best friends, but they go on adventures and it's a lovely script. I enjoyed that character a lot.
That sounds very interesting. It's probably more upbeat than some of your other characters.
Yeah, everybody doesn't die in that one.
All right, would you like to do any shout-outs? Is there anything you would like to talk about? Is there anything you want to highlight or get people's attention to?
If y'all haven't seen anything about Dead Winter yet, I'm actually really excited to be on this production. You were going to show me some test footage that we did, and you said it looks amazing. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of stuff that I would expect myself to be working on, these kind of like darker tones. Like Penny Dreadful. So if y'all haven't seen it, check out like deadwinter.com. Mm-hmm. For some more information on that. And if you want to help with fundraising, we would love it. Shout out to you, to Jordan.
Thank you.
Shout out to Kate outside.
Would you like to plug how they can find you on any social media or find anything you're working on?
You can find my productions that I'm doing right now at Jordan's website, KHZ.
Mm-hmm. KHZ Productions.
And Dead Winter. I don't really do many social media outlets right now. I am working on my own, though.
Okay. Well, that's going to wrap up this interview with Jared. And we will be back next week with our next director, writer, producer, or whoever. but they're a creator, and that's the major thing. And we honor the creators here because that's what tells stories, and that's what gets people thinking and dreaming. So this has been Jordan.
And Jared.
And thank you for listening.